process was also on the mind of Mr. Bergdahl's father as he spent years wondering if his son would ever return back to our country, back to the United States, a process that the Guardian newspaper recently captured here.
I don't work for the military. I don't work for the government. I don't represent the American people. I'm a father who wants his son back.
I know that was Bo's motivation, to help these people. It's how the war is shaped in the minds of a lot of Americans, is that we are there as some kind of Peace Corps with guns, and that is just an impossible mission. It's a mission that we're not very good at, I don't believe. I think the last decade proves that.
The time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. In international conflicts, the truth is hard to come by.
The reason I go back to 1967 and this sermon by Martin Luther King about why he's opposed to the Vietnam War is to gain his inspired wisdom, in my opinion, and then work forward again through time and through history to where my son is in Waziristan, and try to make sense of that. I'm sorry, how can we teach two generations at least of children in this country that we have zero tolerance for violence, but we can occupy two countries in Asia for almost a decade? It's schizophrenic. And no wonder this younger generation is struggling psychologically with the duplicity of this, the use of violence. The purpose of war is to destroy things. You can't use it to govern.
Joining me now is David Rode, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for Reuters and the author of the book A Rope and a Prayer, which is about his experience as a prisoner held by the Taliban for 7 months, as well as E.J. Dionne, columnist for The Washington Post and an MSNBC analyst. We should mention E.J. recently had a foreign policy briefing with the president. Good evening to you both, gentlemen. David, starting with you, given both your personal experience and relating to what it is to be a prisoner in this type of situation in a non-military context for yourself, and your thoughts, since you know the Bergdahls and have spoken with them for some time as a reporter, your thoughts tonight.
It's interesting watching that video of Bob Bergdahl. He's an incredibly proud American, and he was proud of his son's service. He said this at that press conference a few days ago. People are sort of thrown by the beard he's grown. He grew that sort of in solidarity with his son. But, you know, it's been an absolutely brutal 5 years. It has led him to question the war in Afghanistan. He, you know, they hope, they've told me in the past in conversations, that they hope their son's release could lead to some sort of reconciliation process and a peace process in Afghanistan. That's what they hope, that something positive will come out of this. And it's sort of, you know, but I think the controversy this has generated has also surprised them.
What's it like being held as a prisoner in that way?
It's incredibly isolating, and people, there was some question about how could Bo not speak English. I was very lucky. I was held for only 7 months. That's a tenth of the time Bo's been there. And I had an Afghan journalist with me. He later helped me escape. He spoke English. Bo, for 5 years, has not been around anyone who speaks English. It's not unusual for this to happen. There were American contractors held in Colombia for 4 years. They had trouble speaking English as well. And, you know, it's just such an isolating experience. He's got tremendous strength, Bo, to have survived this.
EJ, as you look around here, we last week had a lot of discussions about the president's foreign policy as a proactive approach. What is he trying to do in the world long term because of his West Point speech? Right now, after this event over the weekend, we're doing a lot of reaction to this particular move, its strategy, its legitimacy, according at least to some of the congressional critics, and its security implications. Walk us through in any of that.
Well, I think where you started the show is in some ways the most striking thing. Normally, in other times, a POW being released would bring about great joy. There wouldn't be partisanship. There wouldn't be acrimony. And it really says something about the time we're in that the first news of the release of this POW brought about a storm of controversy, procedural, over whether the president had consulted Congress. People started talking about the POW himself and what he had done and whether he had sort of walked away from the troops. And it was it's a very disconcerting and troubling thing that this is where we have come. And the notion that you don't negotiate with bad guys or terrorists to achieve a result like this, how else do you achieve a result? How else do you bring about any sort of negotiated settlement? And in terms of the Taliban, there's been talk for years about approaches by the United States to the Taliban indirectly, in many cases, to try to bring about some kind of settlement in Afghanistan. So I think there's maybe a legitimate procedural question about the president's lack of consultation with Congress. But I think just the initial reaction to this, I found very disturbing.
You're disturbing and obviously hyper-partisan in an area that some of us would hope still wouldn't be that way. And we also know that, EJ, because of the numbers. The numbers on transfers do not lead you to view this president as the leader of releasing Guantanamo detainees. Under Bush, 532 detainees released. Under Obama, 82. Now, that partly reflects a historical evolution over how many people are left at the base. But, EJ, I think it's fair to say you couldn't focus on the actual detention facts here and land on a spot where you say, oh, all the Gitmo detainees are getting out because of President Obama.
Well, no, in fact, on the contrary, he has been criticized by a lot of people because he has still failed to achieve that promise he made, to meet that promise he made to close Guantanamo. And they tried to locate people in other countries. They tried all kinds of things. The fact is, there are still those prisoners there. And the reason they're there is because the administration decided that releasing them was dangerous. And in this case, there was a kind of prisoner transfer.
Right.
I mean, how many times today has the issue of the Israelis releasing 1,000 to get one
right.
been brought up? I mean, the numbers here are not extreme.
And so, David, when we think about Guantanamo, to the extent that there's a serious policy or values discussion here, Guantanamo is not just a piece of land off the coast of Cuba where some people are still held. I should mention 70 of them, by the way, give or take, cleared for transfer, not a risk, and simply held for no other good reason other than the obstruction and the diplomatic challenges. And yet it's more than that, isn't it? There's also the legal question of how we approach this shifting war on terror and whether, as some have argued, we're simply killing more than capturing, often without a due process as well.
The Taliban sort of see Guantanamo as a rallying cry. They say this shows American hypocrisy. I'm not going to say whether they're right or wrong, but my guards constantly talk to me about Guantanamo.
Hmm.
And they said, we're going to treat you better than inmates are treated in Guantanamo, and you Americans just seize people and put them there. You don't, you know, put them on
trial.
That
was something when you were a prisoner, your Taliban guards said to you.
Yes, and there's terrible things the Taliban have done, and I hate my captors and always will. But, you know, it's a problem. And you talked about the rule of law in the beginning of the show. This is the problem. I mean, we are, as a country, you know, we have decided to leave Afghanistan. The people that are criticizing this exchange, you know, they say the Taliban are very dangerous. Why aren't the critics also calling for, like, a new surge in Afghanistan? We're leaving Afghanistan. There aren't going to be American troops there in 2016. You know, if you're upset that these are dangerous terrorists, then why aren't you calling for more of an effort?
I think that's very well put. There is a difficult policy question here over how you manage the strategic risk, particularly when you're talking about folks who could return to the battlefield. But then there's something else happening on the hard right, which is a sort of intellectual hangover for an exhausted foreign policy. What do you want to do? Go further to war with the Taliban? We've been doing that for over a decade, and yet they're stuck with the rhetoric of saying we always have to be tough on everything and never talking, even though the talking here had led to something. David Rode and EJ Dion, thank you for joining us tonight. Coming up, we're going to talk about what Senator Elizabeth Warren is saying about 2016. She's got a new answer out tonight. And trying to end the war on drugs and trying to pardon nonviolent offenders for their nonviolent